The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 140, and this week I am very pleased to be joined by a returning guest, Mr. Kevin Brown of the Bad Wrestling Podcast. What's up, Kevin?
Nothing much. I've been watching a lot of this crap lately. Way too much. This is like the most I've watched in ages. Like I just gave up on ever catching up on like most of the promotions I was like half interested in.
Yeah.
But now I'm just up on all of them.
I don't know what I've been doing. I was trying to think about this before I came on. I guess lately I've just been watching a lot of High Score Girl, which is this anime that's on Netflix that's really, really good. Like I got through all 15 episodes of season 1/ the OVA and like about a day. So that was I just been watching a lot of that stuff, you know. It's a really good show. If anyone listening to this is either an anime fan in general, or especially if you grew up, like if you're like my age, you know, in your early 30s and you grew up with like 90s gaming, or if you're older, I guess, and you grew up with like 90s like Japanese arcade games and fighting games and all that stuff, like you'll absolutely love the show, because it's like it has this, I mean, look, the show could have skated by on its nostalgia, because the nostalgia is so fucking accurate, and like they have real game footage, and you know, it just feels, even as an American, there's so much stuff in this show where I'm just like, you know, this is literally my childhood. Like, you know, I remember the first time, like the first episode, there's this thing where he's the main character's playing as Guile, and he's doing what they call Machi Guile, which, you know, they translate as Guile turtling. And it's like, that is literally what my brother would do when we played Street Fighter 2 growing up. Like my little brother would always play Guile, and he would always like crouch. And if you got near him, because he's crouching, he's holding for both the charge attacks. So you could either do the fucking flip kick or the sonic boom. And it was so fucking annoying. So I definitely, that gave me flashbacks. So that was great. But like, even beyond the nostalgia aspect, like the show is just really incredibly well written and has a lot of great characters, and is, you know, the love triangle is really good. So all that stuff is great. Definitely recommend the show. I assume you haven't seen it because you haven't seen anything, but
no, I have not. I've never been into fighting games. Like the first competitive video game I was into was StarCraft, and then it was just like Dota and things like that.
I think the show is still good, even if you're not, even if you didn't play that stuff. But
if you did, I believe it is. I've just never heard of it, probably because I'm not into that.
Yeah, but it's on Netflix. I'm sure you can find the fan subs online. Like, you know, there's two seasons so far. So I'm in the middle of season two now. But yeah, that's I guess is what I've been doing. And so far, I guess the weekly update. I still haven't been laid off from my job, even though it's very inconsistent how much work I have to actually do. Like there are days where I'm sitting here, and you know, I start at 10 a.m. and my job is, other than checking in a few times on the inbox, my job is basically done by like 11 a.m. So I'm just, and I'm getting paid for the whole day. So yeah, please don't listen to this employer. But
yeah, that's what mine was. But they basically just gave up and tried to lay everyone off. The problem is I'm on a contract, so they can't do that.
Haha.
So I'm basically getting paid until August to do nothing.
Well, that's good. But yeah, I mean, but there are also days where they give me some giant writing assignment or like working on like this survey thing we did that took forever, or just like we get a ton of voicemails and emails from members of the organization I work for. So there are days where I'm busy, but I'd say like of a 5-day week, it's like 2 days where I'm actually busy and 3 days where I can sit here and watch anime or watch old wrestling or whatever. That's really all I've been doing, I guess, and studying. I've been trying to get back on my Japanese studies too, but you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of anime, have we ever talked about my favorite anime on here?
What's your favorite anime?
The Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Have you ever watched that?
The original? I don't think
yes.
so.
You've never seen it?
No, I saw the second, the one they did recently, I saw like a little bit of.
But which I have never seen, but you have to watch the original one.
Isn't it like 500 episodes or something?
No, it's only about 120.
Really? I thought it was really long. Maybe I'm confusing it with something else. But
You of all people never seeing this surprises me.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so. We also could talk about Attack on Titan. Do you know that time that you were on here and we like, I forget
spoiled what the entire plot of Attack on Titan.
So it was like a G1 episode.
Did anyone ever get mad about that? Yeah, because we did 40 minutes on the plot of that.
This is what I was about to tell you. So it was me, you, and Jack, Jack Beckman from the Voice Wrestling site, and we did like a G1 episode, I think, right?
I think that was I believe he left, and then we were going to do it for like 10 minutes, but we did it for 40?
No, he stayed on the line the entire time.
Oh.
That was the crazy. So he stayed on the line like sitting there blinking, because he's not an anime fan, he does not watch it. And while we went over the Attack on Titan plot and the manga, and like, I don't know what to say, like it was, we clearly said, we are now going to talk about the Attack on Titan manga. Do not keep listening if you do not want to be spoiled if you're watching anime.
We explicitly said we are going to give all the spoilers. Turn it off if you don't want to know them. Like I feel zero guilt for this.
I still got like three complaints.
Couldn't have been more explicit.
I still got like three complaints of like, why'd you spoil the entire show? I'm like, we fucking told you. It was in the title also, I think. You could just not listen to the episode. But yeah, we could. I haven't been keeping up with the insanity that is Attack on Titan. Is it over?
No. Right now, I would say it has to end before the anime is supposed to start this fall. I assume with everything going on in the world now, it's just not going to. Like, I think they've delayed most of that stuff.
Yeah, they delayed a lot of big shows.
So
ReZero got delayed.
Yeah, I know that got delayed. I know they're putting the One Piece anime on hiatus.
Oh, wow.
And that's like never happened in 20 years.
Yeah, wow.
They've trucked on with that for so long.
There is still anime airing this season, and there's still like I don't know if it's how down it is from what it usually is, but there's still like, I don't know, a bunch of shows. So, but yeah, I don't know.
I assume stuff that's done already is probably airing, right? I don't know. I don't know anything about the industry, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think some shows are still being worked on. I think it just depends on the office.
Yeah, but it was clearly supposed to end probably September or October. Now maybe it'll be December or January.
Mm-hmm.
But they're at the end.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I won't spoil any points since you haven't read it in a while. Early into the episode, I'll wait till the end.
Yeah. So it's all I will say is the last thing I read was I just had no idea what was going on. So, but that's pretty typical for Attack on Titan in the last year. So, like, okay.
I mean, they're running out of chapters and they still haven't explained like any of the plot points.
I love it. It's
perfect. They have stuck on doing this for so long, just exactly the same, but they're never going to explain any of it. They're just not.
I don't think so. I mean, they still haven't even. Okay, I shouldn't say that actually, because then this four other people will yell at me. But yes,
yeah, we don't want to get the listeners. I don't want the listeners to hate you.
Here's something I can say. It's not a spoiler. How the fuck are they going to cover all the shit in like even a double season? They're going to cover all the shit in 26 episodes. Because remember when they
I can't say what I think they're going to do because it's too big a spoiler.
Okay.
So we'll talk about it after. I think they're going to chop one part that could be like 6 or 7 episodes into an episode or two and then do the rest at the normal pace.
Okay. Cuz like there's
The first thing that happens after the beach I think they're going to chop it all together. Cuz especially as the story goes on, like it's clear that was really pointless.
Well, completely pointless. Yeah, I know exactly. So you're talking about the first thing that happens after where the anime left off.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you can chop that into literally 1 or 2 episodes and then do the rest at normal pace and you can get it in like
you can honestly probably...
I think you can do it in 12 and it would be better. I think they're going to milk this one to the end though. This is a pretty big cash cow.
Yeah. You could probably chop the entire thing we're talking about, the entire arc, into like a fucking flashback at the start of an episode if you really want. I mean, it has nothing to do with the rest of the fucking plot. They could not show it, honestly.
You could literally not show it, and I don't. You need to introduce those characters, but you don't need to give their full backstory, and especially up to the point we are. Like, I think you're fine in not giving those characters backstories.
Yeah, they're completely meaningless. I don't know why he wrote it that way.
I mean. You've read it all. You like they did pretty good on pacing the politics arc, which was very similar in terms of going on for fucking ever and being completely unnecessary. And they did a pretty good job with that. So I think they might be able to. I think they can squeeze. I think they'll figure it out. They've generally figured out how to work with his material to their credit. Like as stupid as some of the material's been, they've gotten mostly good shows out of it.
I remember like when I first started reading ahead of the anime, and you know the first thing I read I guess was like it would have been like all that stuff with the Beast Titan, right? I think that was like the next thing after the
anime. So the first season ended like right before the Beast Titan,
with them finding the Wall Titan, which that plot point sure fucking meant a lot. Anyway, but yeah, they fight the Beast Titan or whatever, but like then that politics arc started and I remember just being like, what is going on? Like, why is this going on for so long? Like, because it was already over by the time I read it. I just kept reading.
I think people that only watched it are never going to have any idea how fucking long that was.
It was like a year and a half, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was like something insane. I read it all after the fact, but still I'm just like, how fucking long is this going to go? It just went on and on and on. And like, to be clear, even if you don't watch this show, okay, or read my, no idea what we're talking about. The show is called Attack on Titan. It's about, or Shingeki no Kyojin. It's about the Titans, okay?
Yes, that's the core plot. That's the entire draw of this show. That, like...
There are no Titans in this entire 18-month arc until, like, the last two chapters when the guy turns into one.
Yeah, and I don't... people might not even remember now how popular this show was in America.
Yeah.
Like before, on the first run of that season, that was like what, 2011, 2012?
Yeah. Like, it was super popular.
Yeah. I was still in high school then, and everybody watched that. Like people who would never, ever admit to watching this kind of stuff were just all in on it. It was like as popular as like HBO shows and shit.
It broke among through. People my age. I mean, I had been an anime fan for a long time by that point already, and that was the first thing I could remember breaking through. like at Naruto levels, basically, where like people who didn't watch, like since Naruto, like people who don't watch anime watch. So
yeah.
And it was like an
older. We should probably talk about what we came here to talk about, though.
Okay. So
we're gonna have to timestamp this, and then we're gonna go back into the at the end again somehow. I'm sure, because we can. Every time I talk to you, we can never resist talking about this shit.
Because it's like just insane thing that both of us have spent so much of our lives on, and we have no real explanation for why. Yeah,
because I guess I watched it when the first show came out, which is I think 2011 or 2012, and then I looked up like, oh, is there going to be more episodes? And the internet basically said no, but it's like a few years ahead in material if you wanted to read it. So
yeah,
all right, it's not particularly hard to find this that kind of thing online. So I just read it all,
and it's
it's still here. It will not go away.
That 18-month thing, like I said, you just have to think about it. Like, what if they made the... I don't know if they do this or not. Maybe I'm being an idiot, actually, but I never watched The Walking Dead. But I'm assuming The Walking Dead did not go a year and a half with no zombies.
I have also never watched The Walking Dead, so I don't know. But judging by how I hear people talking about The Walking Dead, I actually wouldn't be surprised at that.
Okay. Because it did get really bad eventually.
I know some people, I know people that watch that really hate that show.
Okay. So maybe it's a bad example. Maybe all this shit.
Yeah, I actually think that might be true. I'm pretty sure I've heard that like specific
complaint. So I'm revealing I do not watch American television, everybody. That was just the first example I could think of where like obviously.
It's
very late.
Yeah, it's like if Game of Thrones, I was going to say that if Game of Thrones went a full season without something else those people like, but everyone hated that show too.
All these shit sucks. Everybody, watch High Score Girl. It's the only good show.
If Breaking Bad went a full season without meth, let's go with.
Yeah. People like that show, right? I've never seen that either.
Yeah, I think people as far as I'm aware, people are pretty happy with like the full.
Do you watch American television? Like, do you watch any of that stuff?
I've seen that. I saw it a few years ago, but not very much.
I think the last I was trying to think in my head, the last American TV show I've watched all the way through recently is The Sopranos, probably, but like way, way after the fact. But yeah, that was the last thing I've watched, like all the way
through. Yeah, that sounds, I don't know, like the Netflix show, like all the TV, it's either HBO or Netflix. And I'm not like a high fantasy person, so I just never had any interest in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I never watched that either. So
you never really had any interest in that from the start. And the other ones, like Breaking Bad was pretty good. I never watched The Walking Dead, never really cared about zombies.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that watch that, and I'm just like, okay, I don't know.
I had a lot of friends, but they all complained about that for so long, and I think they finally given it. I didn't know it was still on, because everyone I knew gave up on it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know it was
but apparently, now I know it's on, because now that Twitter is always posting wrestling ratings and like information on ratings, I always see how good it does. So people watch it still.
That's actually a good transition, because we're going to get into. So if you didn't listen last week, we have a new format called Five Matches, which is what we're actually going to talk about. I don't know how long we just rambled about a bunch of shit. But
I'm going to say probably about 30 minutes.
But the Five Matches stuff we're going to talk about here is basically because I don't really like. I probably said it too strongly. Some fucking guy got very angry at me on Twitter for saying that nobody likes the Empty Arena shit. And he was like, oh, I think it's great. I think you can enjoy the show more without a crowd, blah, blah, blah. Like, that really wasn't the point of what I was trying to say anyway, but I was more just saying, like...
I'll take the strong stance here if you want. It fucking sucks, and nobody likes it. I will take this stance.
I'm not
hurt, because it's true. You see the viewership numbers on this shit. Nobody's happy.
Nobody's watching. And look, I've made this theory before. I actually think the viewership numbers are even worse than they look. I made this theory in the Voice Wrestling Slack, actually. I don't know if I made it in public. But, like, I know some people who never watched wrestling, as far as I know, who are like sports people who are watching the stuff because there's no other live sports on. So if that's the case, I think people assume that no one is doing that. And anecdotally, I know several people who are doing that. So if my anecdotal evidence is can be spread out among the entire country, if that's correct, that's even worse, I think, because those people, like, okay, like, I just shout him out. He'll never hear this anyway. My friend Dan, you know, who normally I never heard him watch wrestling before this. He has shown no interest in it. He mostly, when he talks about watching WWE now, he mostly just laughs at it. The moment an actual sport comes back, you know, that he likes, the moment there's baseball, the moment there's hockey, the moment there's basketball, whatever the fuck, he is never watching this again. So that viewer right now means almost nothing. On the other hand, they've run off. So like that would mean if they have a bunch of Dans, they've run off even more of the current fan base than we fucking think. Because they're down, like you said, around 2 million or under.
They were under 2 for Raw, and I think the SmackDown just came out at 2.1, so that's basically there too.
Yeah.
So they especially with network TV, you really have to consider how much of that there's a block, and it's probably a significant block too of people on that one that exclusively just tuned out people who left the TV on from the news.
Yeah, so let's say conservatively they're getting like 500,000 Dans, right? 500,000 people that are just watching this shit that don't normally watch it because there's nothing else on. That means they ran off like, I don't know, what, 1.5 million people who are normal watchers? And you don't know if those people are going to come back whenever.
No, I mean, every time they lose viewers, they never get them all back. They'll get some of them back.
Yeah,
they always get some of them back, and like you can't even blame them for this because it's not for once it's not even like WWE's the only one the COVID, putting on bad shows.
You can't blame them for the COVID shit, but I mean those they are the worst of the empty arena people probably.
I don't think so. I mean I said this like I think of what I've seen, Raw might be the best of the empty arena shows. As insane as that is to say, and like I also said in the pre-recording, NXT is miles away the worst.
Right. Well, NXT's ratings are down a little bit, I guess, but they weren't exactly fucking killing it beforehand. And AEWs are down, but not nearly as down as Raw and SmackDown. I think they're doing like what? Like,
AEW seems to at least be sitting at the same spot, which Raw and SmackDown aren't. They're just losing more every week.
Yeah, AEW is like consistently doing like 650, I think. And, you know, before this, they were consistently doing like 900. So that's a drop, but I mean, it's not like it's.
If they stay there, at least there's the hope that you'll get. If they don't keep losing viewers, at least you know, like, okay, we have these many people that are just engaged enough that won't, and hopefully most of the ones that left come back. Because who knows how many of these people are turning on SmackDown Fox again.
Yeah. So, anyway, so the point was, I guess, that, like you said, lots of people don't like this empty arena shit. It's not just me. And even, like, the empty arena Puro I watch, there's something about it where, like, I don't really want to come on here and talk about it. I mean, like,
it's all just less good. Like, even the Fujita match, which ruled, still would have been better in front of people.
So the five matches format basically is my way of doing a weekly podcast where I don't have to talk about this empty arena shit for as long as this pandemic lasts, which looks like it might be a while, folks, as far as wrestling in front of actual fans. So, you know, we're strapped in here, ready to go.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Yeah.
Japan opens up before the US at least, which will be easier for you. But
my guess is July for Japan.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty decent bet.
Yeah.
But who knows if you're even getting real US shows this year.
Yeah. So that's a good transition into the format, which is basically, if you didn't listen to the episode last week with Joe, the guest picks two matches. I pick two matches, then we each pick a third match that we aren't sure we'll actually get to talk about because it goes to a fan vote, and we'll talk about the winner of the fan vote later. But let's start.
In the description? Can we say? Can I talk about it briefly?
It is in the description, so you can talk about
it. Okay, so I listened to last week's, and Joe was saying, oh, he's going to pick the absolute worst shit for you to listen to, and you know it's going to be the fan vote, and you know it's going to win the fan vote, which was correct in both aspects, but could even he have predicted I would pick anything as bad as a Eugene match?
No, probably not. And look, I tried to counter with another Triple H cage match, and I thought it.
That match also owns. I've seen that match. That match is good.
I don't remember it, so I guess someone else told me it was actually good. But yeah, I still lost like 59% to 41%. So the people want to see the Gene. Can't deny the people. But yeah, so we'll start with your first pick. The Gene has to wait until the end.
Yeah, the Gene only main events. He's not coming on first.
The first pick you made was a three-way match from WCW Sold Out 2000 on January 16th, 2000. It is available, of course, on the WWE Network. I have the link in the description. I'm sure it's probably somewhere else if you search online. I do not recommend giving WWE your money, especially after this fucking week.
So, I'm pretty sure this is literally on YouTube, but I think you owe it to yourself to watch the strange pre-match where Chono is just yelling.
Yes, I was going to talk about that.
I'm pretty sure the match is on YouTube, but if you have a way to get on the network, watch it on there, because you got to watch the weird pre-match with Chono yelling.
I have a Friends Network account that I use, so I have not paid WWE for the network pretty much since it launched, so I'm very happy about that. I don't know how you're accessing the network, but
I think I share it with somebody. It's New Japan is the one that I don't pay for. I feel like I've explained this, but I'm literally on year two of I canceled the credit card on New Japan World, but it just keeps rebilling.
That's awesome.
Without paying. And I'm not going to cancel it, so I kind of just had it forever.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. But yeah, so this is a three-way match from WCW Sold Out 2000. Vampiro versus David Flair versus Crowbar. Before we talk about the pre-match promos or anything from the match, Kevin, why did you pick this match and introduce it for me?
I had a short list and I kind of jumbled up all of them of just matches that I thought would be funny to come on here and talk about. And I haven't done Vampiro in a while. I really don't think we've ever done Vampiro on our show. I was going to give you, have you ever seen the Tim Storm versus Josephus empty arena match?
No, I have not.
I was going to give that, but I figured you've probably seen so many empty arena matches lately that even like a funny old one that was like novel, you probably don't really want to watch right now.
No.
So I gave you this one instead because this match is also very funny. It is technically a three-way match, but it's probably should just be called a handicap match.
Yeah, of course, except they start fighting because that's what always happens in this kind of scenario. But
oh yeah, well you are literally in WCW 2000 at this point.
Yeah.
The jokes are off. This is the joke.
Yeah. It's a I don't know. How do you describe WCW 2000 if someone who's never watched it? It's not as, to me, it's not even as bad as WWE has been for the last decade because...
Well, it's worse, but it's much funnier, so it's much more entertaining.
Yeah,
the thing with WWE and why it's so bad isn't even necessarily that it's horrible or it's offensive. It's just so samey and so bland that it's boring.
Yeah, it's just so...
This is like cocaine bullshit.
Yeah, this is so insane that you can't help but enjoy it to a degree. Now, if you watch it week by week, I'm not sure if that is true. I think it probably will get annoying. But like, if you just parachute in for little periods or the pay-per-views, I mean, it is so insane that...
Yeah, it depends what you're watching it for, I think. If you're watching it specifically to laugh at it, you're going to have a great time. If you want to see great wrestling, you should watch anything else.
The current, whereas like the current, like we said, compared to current WWE, I mean, current WWE, the booking can be stupid for sure, but it does, they don't do, like you said, the completely cocaine fueled.
Yeah. It's bullshit. Not just drug nonsense.
Yeah.
That's like WWE current is just, it's so focus tested and it's even when the booking is stupid and doesn't make sense, it's pretty focused.
Yeah.
Like nothing here is focused. It's just crap thrown at a wall,
yeah,
with whoever still hasn't quit yet, and it's
I said repeatedly this is more fun than watching WWE now, I think.
This is much more fun than sitting down and watching like 2018 Raws. The closest thing, if you're a newer fan that has never watched something this further back, I think the closest thing you'll get to it is like really insane Bischoff TNA.
Right.
For obvious reasons, but even that never really approaches just how ridiculous this is. Like, this is, it's very much its own beast, but that's probably the closest thing you can get.
The Russo TNA also has, like, has this very similar pacing, but it really isn't as insane. I mean, I've seen people make that comparison. I mean, I watched all that stuff, and, like, there's some things that are pretty insane, like the fucking barbed wire Christmas tree and shit, but like week to week, it really is not as insane as this. So that's
no, there was way more just kind of like the thing with TNA, especially I've been watching a lot of TNA recently for various reasons, is that the good stuff is all the stupid stuff, like the Jarrett matches, but most of the undercard is just kind of like well-worked, forgettable matches.
Yeah.
There's a lot less like sheer stupidity on there than I think people remember.
Yeah. Like, because, I mean, the stupid stuff stands out, but like...
Oh, the stupid... Yeah. Their stupid shit transcends.
Yeah. But anyway, so this match itself, you mentioned the promos. So Vampiro starts cutting a promo before the match, and fucking Masahiro Chono just shows up and starts talking first in Japanese and then in broken English. And this is never explained. Vampiro briefly like confronts him, and they just cut away. And I'm like, if nothing sums up WCW in 2000 more than a New Japan wrestler just showing the fuck up to say, I'm Masahiro Chono, I'm the best wrestler, Vampiro confronting him, and it is never followed up on.
I did not look it up.
So I looked it up on Cage Match. Before this segment, the last appearance he made in WCW, the last match he had, was July 1998, when he and the Great Muta beat Alex Wright in the Disco Inferno on Nitro. Presumably this is his first appearance.
Actually sounds like it rules. I'm going to have to go find that after this.
This is his first appearance since then, I believe. He might have done some fucking promo, I don't know. The next night on Nitro, he and Super J. Do you know who Super J is?
Is it somebody else under a different name?
Super J is the fake Sting.
Okay.
He and Super J defeat the Varsity Club of Mike Rotunda and Rick Steiner. Not Vampiro. They defeat the Varsity Club, and he never wrestles in WCW again. That's his last ever WCW match. this promotion's fucking crazy. But yeah,
I don't know how anybody hates this shit. This shit's so good.
The next night, they fucking fight the Varsity Club. They beat the Varsity Club. Him and Fake Sting beat the Varsity Club, and that's his last World Championship Wrestling match of all time. It's incredible. Vampiro, I hope Vampiro runs in or something. I don't know. I didn't watch it, so I don't. But yeah, that's the actual match. Anyway, then David Flair, Crowbar, and Daphne cut probably the worst promo of all time, I think.
It's very bad.
I don't really know how to describe it. You try to describe this. Describe this promo.
I'm trying to think of like what the comparison is. It's just like it's very like indie guy like Dragon Gate USA promo where
I think it's way worse.
People can act, but they give them none of the people can act. It's like the core.
So
the core issue here is no one knows how to read lines.
Mean Gene is with these three people, and they basically do. Mean Gene's like, talk to us about Vampiro, and David Flair's doing maybe the worst. Like the idea is supposed to be these are like three psychos, right? And he is doing maybe the worst quote unquote crazy laugh I think that's ever been put on film, right? I just cannot think of a worse one. He is doing the worst crazy laugh of all time. And says he's going to break, like whispers it basically between laughing that he's going to break Vampiro's bones. And then Crowbar, who, you know, everybody's going to make fun of David Flair, but Crowbar's fucking facial expressions are incredibly awful. There was no way, I mean, before this he was doing like Devin Storm, I guess, on the indies, which I think was just like a normal wrestler. And they were like, hired him and told him, play a crazy person. And he clearly had no idea how to do that. So he says something like, you know, I'm going to rip his flesh. And they cut to Daphne, who also, I don't know if she ever gets better, but at this point she cannot act either. And she's like, you know, again, doing the crazy laugh and like, I'm going to pick the bones. And then Mean Gene, I guess, says, you are sick people. Let's get back to the ring. And I'm just like, they just told you that they were gonna like fucking maim this poor guy. And you gave the very, very understated reaction. I think Bobby the Brain Heenan immediately says there's four sick people, which is a great line. But yeah, so the promos were already crazy. Then I remember that David Flair carries a Crowbar, which that is not confusing at all. Having a wrestler named Crowbar, while there's also a man carrying a Crowbar who is teaming with Crowbar, but he is not Crowbar. I'm like, okay. But yeah, Vampiro. So Vampiro is like, oh God, what was I going to say? I completely lost my train of thought.
So this is like, oh, it's like basically a Vampiro squash. It's very weird.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised this went, because again, they keep billing it at, they don't bill it as a handicap match, even though it obviously is one of the most important things. And there's so much weird stuff. Like, have you ever really watched a lot of David Flair?
No, not really.
I didn't realize they were having him do like womanizer shit too.
I guess so.
Because wasn't that the spot in this one where they tried to like, it looked like they were almost about to fight, and then Flair just started making out with Daphne.
Yeah.
And then Vampiro just runs in for the pin.
Yeah, I guess that's what happened, right? I mean, so there was a lot wrong with this match, but like, I just want to say before I get into like the things I didn't like about it, Vampiro, like, I as a kid I really liked him, and like I probably, I guess, like 13 at the time, and you know, he had this cool look. He's a fucking vampire. He had this really cool theme song, not the one he used here. I don't know if it was overdubbed or if he just wasn't using it yet, but do you remember that theme song he had that was like this really funky guitar riff?
Yes.
That, I love that fucking theme song as a kid. So that was great. And he's really kind of the highlight of this match. I mean, when he's like whipping both of their asses, the match kind of rules.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is like a Vampiro squash match.
Yeah. The problem is when they do the two-on-one offense, that is really boring. Like the David Flair and Crowbar beating him up. Other than Crowbar doing this like dive to the floor from the apron, which was really cool. Everything else David and Crowbar do is really, really kind of eh. And Crowbar is like a competent wrestler. I always thought he was kind of overrated. Like some, I remember internet smarks at the time really loved him. I'm just like, I guess he's fine. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen Devin Storm indie matches. Where did he work?
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm bringing up the cage match for him now.
But like, you know, David and Crowbar started fighting, which is also, you know, a very like trope of these kind of matches. Here's where I learned they were the WCW Tag Team Champions from the first time, because the announcers brought it up, and, you know, when they were fighting towards the end of the match, because they never had the belts with them. So Vampiro kicked the Tag Team Champions' asses by himself. It was great. And you mentioned that David and Daphne kiss. I think they kissed without actually touching lips at all.
Yeah, it's a very it's a very, very awkward, like,
but yeah,
it's a really awkward interaction.
But yeah, Vampiro is pretty great in this match, and like when he turns Crowbar's Rana into like a sit-out powerbomb, that ruled. Crowbar is fine. He makes some really terrible faces that really got distracting. David Flair, if you've never seen him, is possibly the worst wrestler of all time. He's up there at least. And like, there's one point where I've never seen a man, because I don't think I've ever seen this match before, by the way. I didn't mention that earlier. I definitely was not ordering WCW pay-per-views in 2000. And
you never saw Sold Out 2000 before?
And so let me finish what I was going to say. When I finally went through like all these pay-per-views years later, I think I probably just skipped a bunch of matches because none of this was familiar to me. I definitely saw Benoit and Sid on this show, but I don't think I saw the rest of the show. So there you go.
Oh, I should have picked a Sid match.
You should have picked a Sid match.
I should have found a Sid match. But that's another guy I keep wanting to do on our show, but I never get.
But yeah, so David Flair, I mean, I have never seen a wrestler deadweight somebody getting thrown out of the ring before. And he deadweighted Vampiro just being thrown through the ropes to the floor. Like, Vampiro really fucking had to, like, heave this man. Because David Flair, like, went stiff as a board and, like, couldn't get thrown out of the ring correctly. I don't think I've ever seen that in my entire life. I mean, that was incredible. So, yeah, David Flair, I mean, as bad as you've heard he is, he's probably worse. I mean, he is.
Yeah, this one really, really sticks out, especially when you're, like, going to an insane Vampiro cocaine match.
Yeah.
Because that, you don't really have to work well, but you have to, like, move a lot in a match like this. Because Vampiro, for whatever you have to say about him, it's not like he's, like, doing a technical masterclass, but he's constantly out there doing shit, and you kind of have to keep up with him.
I mean, if you don't know anything about Vampiro, he was barely trained when he started in Mexico. So, obviously, he's never going to be this great technical wrestler. I mean, he had a ton of charisma, and he had, like, a presence to him that got him over in Mexico. And then also, I mean, he was over as shit here. I mean, he was
this show, like, this match was hot. People were into Vampiro.
He was always over in WCW, and they never pushed him because I guess they were never going to push anybody that wasn't like the good old boys club or whatever. But like, he was always super over. So I don't know. I mean, he was very over here, and you know, that presence really carried him. I mean, he was not what you would call a good pro wrestler from a technical standpoint, but like, he could have these entertaining matches when he was carried by his charisma and was doing cool moves and stuff. So, but yeah, I mean,
yeah, I mean, he's like the prototypical of what Lucha Brawlers are now.
Yeah. But I feel like he did a lot more moves. I feel like than like an LA Park or something.
Yeah, he definitely did a little more moves, but it's like the same kind of like basically what he basically does wacky brawls.
Right.
It's kind of
that's a good point. I mean, like
he just does a bunch of shit. It's not like a connected match. It's just a lot of really cool shit.
Yeah, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I remember in 2000 he had a match I have seen before with Mike Awesome that's like famously awful because like they can't get on the same page and they're blowing every spot they're trying. But like, and that was two guys that were both like, you know, cool spot guys. And I think they just needed somebody in there to actually like lay out a match or, you know, take the cool moves. And they were both just trying to do the cool moves. And I don't know. I remember it ends with Mike Awesome nearly breaking his neck on the top rope powerbomb. But yeah, it was that match is pretty legendarily horrible. But it's one of those legendary horrible matches that like I would totally recommend watching because it's just, I don't know, it's like remember, you know that Sandman Sabu match in ECW where like they botch everything they try? Like those matches are really funny, so I definitely recommend watching it. But yeah, this was not that funny, honestly. But David Flair, like I said, not getting thrown out of the ring correctly was really funny. So that's probably my highlight.
Yeah, this is like really good. If you just want to see Vampiro beat the shit out of losers, it's perfect.
So
there you go. If you enjoy Vampiro, if like the idea of watching him do Vampiro shit entertains you, this is like kind of pinnacle Vampiro shit.
Yeah. So I don't really.
Have you kept up with Vampiro in recent years?
I have not. I just know he's like a commentator for AAA or something.
Well, he's currently been claiming that he has Alzheimer's, and now I believe he's saying that weed cured his Alzheimer's.
Sounds legit.
I believe Vampiro. A lot of people are making fun of him, but I want on record here, I trust Vampiro.
All right. So that we can move on then, I guess, to my first pick, which was Kazuchika Okada defending the IWGP Heavyweight title against Tetsuya Naito on January 5th, 2020 at Wrestle Kingdom. I picked this for you because I thought it would be funny if you, well, first of all, I picked a few because I don't think you saw it. Like I remember you tweeted about Wrestle Kingdom.
No, I did not see this one.
You tweet about Wrestle Kingdom weeks later. I remember you tweeting about like Hiromu Osprey and Okada Ibushi. So I was like, okay,
watch. Yeah, I made it through day one and then like picked like two things off day two.
Yeah. So First of all, I knew you hadn't seen it. And second of all, I thought it would be funny if you hated what is possibly my favorite match of all time. Definitely, like, I don't think it's the best match of all time, to be clear. Like, I think it's, I had a very, you know, like, emotional reaction the first time I watched it. I remember we're in some, like, again, to bring it, I don't know if we brought up this group chat or not on the air. I think
that was before Lord Pizza State.
We're in a group chat together, and I think it was Ava who said, just like, you've been waiting for this for like your whole life. So I get it. But yeah, I mean, like I'm very emotionally attached to the match. I do think it's an amazing match. It's like a 5-star match, but I'm also aware that I'm very biased. And like, you know, if Naito had lost that match, I probably wouldn't have liked it nearly as much. I may have stopped watching New Japan, honestly. And, you know, everything like just kind of clicked together. And when I was watching it live and, you know, was one of those matches that really, like, you know, I don't know. It's very corny to say, but it made me feel something. So, it very.
Oh, that's just like the next match did for me. Actually,
it was a very emotional reaction. So, you know, it's something I waited. I still think, and there's some people who think the fact that Naito won here is some kind of, you know, acquittal of New Japan for not having him win in 2018. I don't think that's true. I still think he should have won in 2018. I think the crowd was even hotter for him then. I think it was his moment. I think the argument people make is like, wow, Naito losing there was set up Okada to lose to Cody at Dominion. I'm like, well, that's great, but then fucking Kenny leaves 6 months later, so who gives a fuck? Like, you can't tell me long-term for New Japan, it wouldn't have worked out better if Naito won at that Dome. They don't even do the Kenny right until, like, hey, you're going to, like, actually fucking resign with us? And, you know, if he tells them no, then they just don't do the Kenny thing. Like, I don't know. And I'm obviously very biased because I love Naito and I don't love Kenny, but I just think you didn't need to do that reign, especially when he was about to leave. And yeah, you didn't know he was about to leave, but you knew his contract was up. So I don't know. I don't think that's like, people think the last, I guess, 2 or 3 years of New Japan is like, of the IWGP title is like some genius booking. And it's just like, no, I think you could have changed this, this, and this, and had it be better. But, you know, that's not to take away from this moment, which is still really great. But I just don't think, I don't think the moment would have been any worse 2 years earlier, honestly. So I don't know how you feel about that, if you even care, but.
I have very few thoughts on 2020 New Japan booking. I will say the first one, I guess it's now the 2 years ago Tokyo Dome main right. event. I feel like I thought it was pretty good, even though everyone hated it for the result.
I liked it too. When I really
people really back. Didn't like yeah. that one. I don't know how much of that was just the result and how much of it was just people didn't like it.
I don't think they've ever had a bad match, because I remember the 2012 Korakuen one is like one of my favorite matches ever. Nobody remembers that one. I'm probably going to give it to somebody eventually during this, because I love that match. The 2014 Dome, I think, is really good and super underrated, because, you know, it was in this weird semi-main event slot when the Naito babyface push wasn't working. But the match itself is awesome. And they have like a G1 match around that same time, I think 2015, that's really good. I mean, they just have very good chemistry together. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, and so I'll say again, if you definitely wanted to pick one for me to shit on, you, as I've told you before we recorded, you unfortunately picked the wrong one of these.
Yeah, I should have picked a different New Japan.
Yeah, you should. I mean, if you want to want to shit on, you should have picked Okada Ibushi just from the night before. It's fine. Yeah. That one is so much worse than this one.
I mean, even though I liked it a lot more than you, I definitely agree. I mean, I was like 5 stars on this and like 4.25 on Okada Ibushi. But
that was like the prototypical of the joke about nothing happening in the first 15-20 minutes.
Yeah, and the fact that a lot of people went 5 on it anyway really like blew my mind, because I remember sitting through that match and being like, is something gonna happen? Is there gonna be a thing? I mean, I don't honestly think it's a stretch to say the Fujita Shiozaki opening was way more impactful than that. I really don't, which some people are probably going to like fucking throw down their iPods when they hear this, but
it's just artistic preference, because that one was done, like, they were doing nothing for the effect. Yeah. The other one were just doing nothing. There was no effect.
Yeah. I mean, I think the match.
Even if you didn't like it, I think it, even if you didn't like the stare down and thought it was stupid, I think anyone with like some degree of critical thinking understands what they were going for, like it or hate it.
The Okada Ibushi, you know, I do think after they finally get past that point, the match is so fucking good for the rest of it that I still liked it a lot. But like the entire, I just don't know how you can throw out like 15 to 20 minutes that are that nothing and be like, yeah, 5 stars. I'm just like, I don't really get it. But, and again, it's a good contrast to this one, because like the opening portion of this is just so much better than the opening portion of Okada Ibushi. I mean, they just do so much more impactful shit. They're going pretty fast from the start. First, like Naito, there's like a really awesome cool like spot where Naito like breaks out the cravat to go after Okada's neck, and Okada looks like he can barely move his neck a lot around this time. So I thought that was a great little, a great thing to target. And then there's like this crazy big boot from Okada where Naito tries to run in for the Destiny Dough, then Naito just takes this like crazy flip bump for. And this is like all in the first 10 minutes. I'm like, they just did so much more in the first like 10, 15 minutes than Okada and Ibushi did. But everybody knows I love this match, so I might as well let you talk about it. What do you think about
I thought this was pretty good. This is like the best one of these main. I'm trying to think what the last main event that was, the last Tokyo Dome main event that was as good as this one was. Just for comparison, I feel like I can never live up to how much you love this one.
Didn't you just say you liked Okada Naito 2 years earlier?
Oh yeah, but I like this one was better than that.
Okay.
But I think that's more of an example. Just I just remember like nobody really liking that for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Not at the I don't know why.
Not at the level of this, at least.
No, I mean, but I mean, this was also the end of the story. People are obviously going to like this one better.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I saw some people who even aren't like huge Naito fans or even like Naito sort of haters that still like this. So I assume the match itself must have been like, you know, good enough.
I mean, maybe this is just me saying because I'm not a huge fan of it, but I don't know how you could like this style and not like this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's very hard to see. Like, this seems like close to the best you can do this for me.
Yeah.
Because it all matters. There's no, like, it gets a little slow, but it's just, that's the nature of going this long. Sometimes you need to slow down just to keep your stamina and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I don't really know how you could like this style and like say, oh, this sucked.
The only thing
if you hate the style, I could see how you would think it sucked. I wouldn't argue with you on that one. But if you like it, I'm surprised to hear that someone wouldn't like this one.
The only thing it doesn't have, probably, that people who love this style of match usually expect from New Japan is it doesn't have like a really, really long reversal dance, which I'll be honest, some of the, I mean, I love New Japan, but some of the reversal dances get pretty ridiculous even for me.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, I don't like that. I think most of them just start to look silly.
Yeah. So this one, it never goes. I mean, there's a reversal dance, but it's like actually pretty early on, which is a great little, like, again, structuring this differently than a lot of these main events. And, you know, I remember I was shitting my pants for it through real time. So, well, that's probably an effect you can't.
Did you think they were going to end it there early? Because obviously I had the timestamp, so I had a general idea when it was going
to
end.
I mean, my level of, like, needing Naito to win this, I was not thinking that rationally, I guess. Like, I was not.
Okay, that's fair. No, yeah, that makes sense.
I was not timing it in my head. I'm just like, he better fucking kick out his Rainmaker. I was like being so ridiculous by that point. I was like not looking at my television for the kick out. For the pinfall. I was like, I am not going to watch this if he's going to fucking get pinned. So yeah. The other thing about this match that really, I think, elevates it a level above a lot of these types of matches is Naito's leg selling, which, you know, in the last time we talked about this match, I put over Okada because I think people wouldn't necessarily expect me to do that, right? Like, they'd expect me to praise Naito. But I will just say, like, Naito's leg selling here was just incredible. And, like, when he hits that Destino and, like, clutches the leg with the, like, just the right amount of, like, because there's a certain kind of leg selling that's, like, fucking ridiculous and over the top and, like, you know, like Will Ospreay screaming, like
the classic hold your limb and make silly faces into the camera.
Yeah, and like Kenny Omega used to do that a lot too. Naito clutches it, but for like half a fucking second, and then it's just enough, that half a second, to let Okada kick out. Like, that's the kind of shit that I love in a match like this. So he does it perfectly, and he never like forgets about it either. The Stardust Press, I think I almost pissed myself. I don't think the live crowd actually thought he was going to pin him with that. I think the live crowd was just like, you know.
Yeah, again, I feel like I'm like, again, I did like watching this very much, especially for a match like this. I think you're always going to miss out by having the timestamp and knowing, and obviously I knew who won, but I don't think it matters to me that I know who wins as much as I know, like, you know, it always hurts a little bit when, especially this is a stadium main event, so the entire drama is how it's going to end.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to watch it knowing, oh, there's 26 more minutes in the video. There's no shot this is the kick out, even on a spot that looks good. Like you said, that reversal thing, the reversal happening earlier in the match, like I kind of noticed that, but I didn't put any stock into it because I'm like, oh, well, I know it's not close to over yet, so.
Right. That
actually sounds like a much cooler touch if you see it live and you have no idea how it's going to end.
Yeah. I mean, like, the fact that they do that reversal dance and then, you know, they hit the Rainmaker and all, and then they just keep going, it ended up being, you know, I think a very different type of match than we normally see from an Okada big main event. And then the finish on top of that is a little more defended than you usually get in these big New Japan matches. I mean, here there's really almost no reversal of Francis exchanges. I mean, Naito, he hits the Stardust Press, he covers and Okada kicks out, he goes for Destino, a, like, clearly spent Okada, like, very briefly blocks it, but we don't go to any more, like, you know, crazy dances. We just go to Naito hits the Valencia, which is like that that sit out Nord Lights Bomb thing he added, and then he hits a Destino for the pin. So it's like very definitive compared to your standard. You know, they basically did the reversal, like the finisher reversals earlier, so they could have this like very definitive, like Naito just beats a guy moment, which I think in hindsight was like even more satisfying for the Naito fans. And, you know, if he just got lucky and like reversed the Rainmaker into the Destino the way he kind of did the first time he beat him for the title back in 2016, even without the run-ins and stuff, like he just kind of like reverses the Rainmaker and then just hits the Destino out of nowhere and wins. Like this was much more like, you know, this is his moment. He gets to beat him. Like we're finally giving the Naito fans what we've been stringing them along for fucking really 8 years, if you want to go all the way back, at least like fucking 3 years. So
I mean, he came back what, about 3 years ago, like from the excursion when he really started doing this gimmick.
No, that's late 2015. But at okay. least he won the title very briefly in 2016. But so I mean, I guess you could say, if you want to say this character, how long has he been waiting to win the title again? It's like almost 4 years. He lost at Dominion 2016 back to Okada. So yeah, I mean, it's like 3.5 years. So, you know, I mean, they basically did give you that payoff. They did not fuck around. They didn't have him fucking get lucky. They just let him beat the guy. So
yeah, they left no doubt here.
Yeah.
What do you know what the Okada plan was supposed to be this year?
I assume he was going to be in the, you know, just like, I mean, he was feuding with Taichi, and then I assume Jay White was going to take him out in the first round of the New Japan Cup because that bracket was out, and then he probably was going to have to beat Jay White, and then I don't know. It's a good question. I assume that this is my assumption. After the match, Naito, you know, he says winning the main event, the Tokyo Dome feels good, because Okada had previously told him he could never know how it feels 2 years ago. And then they said they should meet it in the main event of the Tokyo Dome again. And Okada does like the little LIJ fist salute, which was a great, I assume he, I don't know if he came up with that in the moment or they told him to do that, but that was such a great moment. You know, like the crowd really loved that. But yeah, I mean, I assume they were going to main event with this again next year. I mean, that's my.
Oh, you think they were just going to run it again?
Yeah. Cause like you can run it. Like, let's just assuming the Dome was one night. I mean, they did the match, but they did not like, they didn't really spend it as a main event because this had one day of build. I mean, this was like Naito being Jay White and Okada being Ibushi. If you want to look at it like this, the real main event that was actually built up for these shows was Okada and Ibushi. So I think you could have run Okada and Naito again the following year with Naito holding the belt all year, and it would have sold it. It would have done like the same like 40,000 that they did on night one this past year, which they might still do whenever they can resume. But, you know.
I mean, at this point, everyone's going to be so starved for this, they may as well just run another Dome show as soon as they're allowed to run.
But yeah, I think Okada was going to do some time-killing stuff like the Taichi feud, and then he was going to win the G1, and we would have had Naito Okada. So, again. But yeah, that's just my guess.
That's the bold prediction for where they would have gone this year.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it was just an incredibly and really, I think, perfectly laid out match. One of the easiest like 5-star rings I've ever given in my life. So I'm glad you liked it, I guess. I sort of wanted the comedy of you just being on and telling me.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. I was going to kind of try and watch it and like kind of just make weird nitpicks, but it felt too disingenuous to do.
Yeah. I mean, it is a really good match. So, all right. So let's go to your second pick, which is BJ Whitmer versus Steve Corino from June 24th, 2016. I told you before we recorded, I think, that I'd never seen this and you were surprised, but I was really not a huge fan of Sinclair Ring of Honor, you know, like even before the AEW split or whatever. It's like I was watching some shows. It was pretty much like I watched the shows I went to and I watched the shows that I, you know, went like didn't.
You like, happen to be trip. Home with nothing better to do to
I
watch.
I happen to be home with nothing live. Better to do. That's a great point too. And like this was a pay per view. So like
You had to pay for this.
Yeah, so there's no way I would have paid for this. So I went to some shows. I watched like those fucking the New Japan shows or whatever the crossover ones. But I looked at the card, I was like, yeah, I definitely didn't see this. But
I actually watched this whole show to prepare for this. It's honestly not that bad of a show. It was fine.
So what, I guess, go ahead, tell me why you picked this. And
remember how you just said that that was like the easiest five stars you've ever given?
Uh-huh.
Well, the same thing applies here.
Okay. So why did you?
This is one of my favorite funny matches ever. But I think one of the important things you have to understand is the build to it and why it's so good.
I sincerely think this is a good match.
Oh yeah, no, it sincerely rules. It's just the comedy of how it happened. They were building Steve Corino versus BJ Whitmer on TV for about 2 years.
Right.
So, like, this match is built significantly longer than, like, anything that's been on a WrestleMania this decade.
Yeah.
But they basically, Whitmer was fucking with Carino for literally 2 years at this point.
Right.
And they were supposed to do this. They were supposed to do it about a year and a half earlier, but Carino had some kind of back surgery. Then they were supposed to do it again, but ran it off as some angle where he came back under a mask. That I unfortunately don't remember exactly. And then they finally do it. And for those who probably won't watch it, the entire angle is Whitmer is basically terrorizing Carino's family. He's taken his son on as a young boy, and he just keeps abusing him in front of his father. He keeps, like, creepily harassing his wife at a grocery store.
And that was in the pre video, and like,
yes, that one was like, in the pre tape.
He went all DDP 2001.
And I remember you noted, because you were watching this right before, and you said, "Oh, this thing is so long," but I don't think you realized how long of it was the pre tape.
Yeah, like
fit 2 years of built into it.
The match itself is 15 minutes, so yeah, it's a lot of it's the pre tape.
But after all this time and after all these years of fucking with his family, what do you think happens? Do you think he wins this match? Do you think he gets justice on the person who's been terrorizing him and his child and his family for all these months?
I would have guessed yes, but the answer is no, he does not get justice. He loses.
He loses. And do you know who he loses to? Not just to BJ Whitmer, but to an ancient Kevin Sullivan running and then spiking him in the head.
This really is like this is a perfect match for you, because it really is the exact like fucking junction of dumb fucking terrible shit, but still really good. Like, it is a legitimately good brawl that I really enjoyed, and it's so fucking stupid.
Yeah, the brawl part, we'll start with talking with the actual match. The brawl was, like, really good, especially for, like, in this era of ROH. Like, they let their guys bleed, but they were straight up just hitting each other over the head with glass bottles and things like that.
Yeah, BJ gives him, like, the shoot punches to open up his eye. That was great.
Yeah, I think when I watch this, I think he breaks the blade job too early.
Oh, yeah.
Did you think that? Because doesn't it feel like he... It looked like BJ was really pulling those punches. I don't think he was supposed to bleed there. And he still kind of clipped him.
I got you. Yeah, maybe.
But through the table. Yeah.
There was an early highlight I wanted to mention. Kevin Kelly practically sounds like he's in tears describing Carino's new life and how he had to let all that go to become this demon again. I was like, wow, that was some commentary there, Kevin. He was like, I don't know. Yeah, he sincerely does a better job selling this fucking Steve Corino shit than I think I've heard a WWE announcer sell anything in like 15 years.
Him and Nigel both, where Nigel refuse to take a part in this. I refuse to watch this. We do not condone this here. Ring of Honor.
They sound more into this than like Michael Cole has ever sounded about anything. I mean
they're all really... clearly in on, I feel like everyone was clearly in on this joke.
Yeah. It's really something. But yeah, we get the demon inside Steve Corino, repelled him to kick out as that exploded through the table. And then my favorite detail, Corino took a beer bottle that Matt Taven left at ringside. Excuse me? Why was Matt Taven coming out with beer bottles?
I don't understand. I actually watched the whole show. You didn't watch the whole show. So Matt Taven was out there doing like a drunk commentary gimmick, making fun of like the current iteration of the All Night Express.
What the fuck? What the hell? But yeah, he beats him with the beer. He was doing, Matt Caven was doing a drunk commentary gimmick to make fun of the All Night Express.
Yes, that is actually
how it happened. Oh, I'm like crying laughing, but like, what the
fuck? The beer bottle spot also looked sick.
Yeah.
Pointed out. Like, they got the perfect angle on, like, just cracking it over his head when he hit him with it.
Yeah. Anyway, so he, and then he starts like carving up a part of the bottle, which that was crazy. Carino gets like rubbing alcohol and like pours it into the cuts. I hope that was just water, because Jesus.
I hope it was real, because I think wrestling is real.
And then the lights go out and Kevin Sullivan shows up and hits Carino with the golden spike. So Whitmer can hit the exploder for the pin. That was I mean, I legitimately would go 4 stars on this. Probably it was a really.
I mean, it's an easy 5, but I'll forgive you for this one. We can't all see the light.
It's an awesome. It's an awesome brawl. It's a really good brawl. So,
and if you want to know how this ended, like what happened after it, it basically led for the former Punishment Martinez. Now he is NXT's Damian Priest, just becoming a spooky makeup guy with Kevin Sullivan.
That's great. But yeah, so this is, I mean, look, this is, I have to say, you really failed here because you're the Bad Wrestling Podcast and you gave me a great match. So I don't know what you're thinking.
Everyone hated this in real time. This
what
thing
the
was
fuck?
Like,
loathed. Why?
Yeah, this thing was loathed. I don't, I mean, I assume it's just like ROH fans are never, have never been like historically the most humorous bunch.
I mean, look, this is really funny, but like the brawl stuff is fun. Like, what is. I don't really it's not like they were botching anything. It's not like they did anything wrong.
I think also you gotta understand there was literally a 2-year build to this, and this is how they ended it.
Yeah.
Because of course, I'm not sure if I was too clear, but Carino gets basically killed by Kevin Sullivan, and this is the end of the angle. Like, it's never brought back. Like, he never gets his justice for this 2 years of terrorizing his family. It was basically just they basically used a 2-year thing to debut a Kevin Sullivan angle, which lasted for like 3 months. So I think that was a big part of why people were so mad at it. But that honestly just makes it funnier.
Okay. My second pick, I guess we could transition over to that, was Kota Ibushi versus Kagetora from December 29, 2007, in the El Dorado promotion, a show called I Was Born to Love Treasure. Why did I pick this? So I picked this because last week, first of all, I mentioned how great Kota Ibushi was during this whole period. And like, you know, just, he was very raw, but he was like, just very badass. And I've mentioned El Dorado like a million times on this podcast, probably, and never actually watched or covered anything from it. So I thought we should finally do an El Dorado match. I'll explain what El Dorado is for people who don't know. But do you,
yeah, I was going to say, give me the full background on this.
Have you ever watched El Dorado before? Or no.
No, this is the first thing I've ever seen from it.
So basically, Toriumon in 2004 becomes Dragon Gate, right? I think everybody knows that, or anyone who knows anything about Dragon Gate knows that. At first, they kept pretty much everybody from the T2P that used to be in the T2P promotion, because like the Toriumon was like 3 stages. It was Toriumon Japan, T2P, and Toriumon X. Toriumon Japan is like all the really famous guys that people know. Shima, Magnum Tokyo, Genki, I think. Yeah, Genki Horiguchi. You know, everybody that you can think of. T2P was like Milano Collection AT is the ace. And then some of the people who went on to Dragon Gate and stayed forever were from that, like Naruki Doi and Masato Yoshino. But also a lot of people from T2P like did not last, like Shuji Kondo, Brother Yashi, a ton of people like that.
So all the coolest people? Are we talking Yashi here?
Yeah, Yashi. And like, you know, so they did eventually merge into Toriumon Japan before it became Dragon Gate. Toriumon X never joined up with Toriumon Japan other than a couple guys. I think actually just Naoki Tanizaki actually left for Toriumon Japan before that ended. So 2004 happens. Toriumon Japan, they basically break off Multiple Dragon. They become Dragon Gate. The Toriumon, the T2P guys don't last, a lot of them, like pretty much all the ones I just mentioned, Kondo, Yashi, a ton of other guys, but those are like...
All the guys who go to become Dove Pro.
Yeah, Toru, Washi, a bunch of other people. They don't last in... basically, the entire Aganizu unit is gone by the end of 2004. Mulatto Collection AT is gone by like early 2005. So they all get together with the Toriumon X people who never went into Dragon Gate, and they become what's called Dragon Door. It was backed by a really famous, like, I think it was like an online blog service, if I remember correctly. It was like basically one of these like fucking internet corporations that just had its hand a lot of pots. But I think the main thing was like a blog, like you could like write your own blog or something. It's called Live Door. So Dragon plus Door, Dragon Door. You know, that did not last that long because, you know, that was like mid 2005, I believe. And, you know, Live Door ended up having a huge financial scandal. So, you know, they basically lost their funding. Like, they lost the giant company that was funding them. So most of the people involved in Dragon Door, not everybody, like Mulatto Collection AT appeared in Dragon Door, I think on the very last show only, and he never appeared for El Dorado. He pieced out to America forever. He was in Ring of Honor a bunch. And then when he comes back to Japan, he joins New Japan. So he never joins back up with this group. But basically the remaining like T2P and Toriumon X people form El Dorado, which is like more of a part-time promotion than a full-time promotion. But like a lot of these other guys were also like doing like the Toriumon X guys basically became the Michinoku Pro roster during this period. Kondo and Yashi were doing Voodoo Murders in All Japan. Toru Owashi became like a big star in DDT, obviously, and he's still there to this day. Takuya Guerrera, who I forgot to mention before, he became a big star in 01. He's still there to this day. Kondo and them were like they went on to be in Wrestle One. Anyway, so it's it kind of they end up all over the place, but they all basically come back together to do this El Dorado thing like once or twice a month, and this lasted from like February 23rd, 2006, until December 15th, 2008. So they were about a year away from closing here, and the promotion was like famously cursed. Like everything they tried to do, they would like form these. Like the first big feud was like would Sugawara join back up with the Aga and Izu people, or would he be in this healing unit from Michinoku Pro called Stoned? And just when they finally paid it off, somebody got injured. I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Sugawara himself. It could have been Kagetora, who was in Stoned. It was somebody like really.
Are you saying Stoned?
Yeah, Stoned.
Is this like a weed gimmick?
I think so. I guess I don't know.
I'm very glad that they are. Very, very long tradition of Dragon System weed gimmicks stays going.
But yeah, he joins this unit, and it's like the big payoff, and we're finally getting ready to start the big war, and then immediately somebody gets hurt. I think it was Sugawara or Kagetora. So they're like, okay, well, we can't do this now. And then they form like these new units. They basically all – they have like a draft or something basically, and they all form – like they basically decide all the Agon members – are each going to get their own unit. And then at that point, Owashi forms Animal Planets, which is like one of my favorite unit names of all time, where all the members have like an animal theme.
Who is it? Who else was in that? I've never seen that.
Let me think about this. Bear Fukuoda, I think. He's like my ex guy. There was like a couple other guys. But Antonio Honda was in one of these units. And like this is when people first like just started discovering him. At least over in the West. But yeah, so like this is a really, but that goes really badly too, because I think like Brother Yashi gets hurt or something. So like everything they tried to do, like there would be some injury or someone would fucking leave or somebody would fucking, so the El Dorado curse like became a thing. So, you know, the idea was supposed to be, we start off doing like a monthly or a twice monthly show in Shinjuku Face, and then we stop doing that. And we, we switch over to, eventually, hopefully we can run Korakuen a lot. They never got past running Korakuen like a few times a year, the way like 2AW does now. So this is like one of their few Korakuen shows of the year. I think they did like three or four probably. They just never got to a level where they were able to run full tours. And like they said at the start, like our goal was to be like a full-time promotion for all these people. And it never happened. So the promotion folds and eventually becomes Secret Base, and that still exists to this day as a very low level indie. But yeah, that's basically the El Dorado story. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know, Kota Ibushi was always like a frequent guest star for El Dorado, which is, he was also guest starring a lot in Dragon Gate at the time. So that was kind of funny because these two promotions pretty much hate each other. But it didn't stop Kagetora from going right from Eldorado Dragon Gate, because of course Dragon Gate fans will know he's still been there to this day. But yeah, that's
pretty much. I still want to call him Jimmy Kagetora, but then I remember it's not anymore.
And this is the other funny thing about this match, other that has like a long history. This is for the Independent Junior title. Do you know about the Independent Junior title?
I do not.
So that title dates all the way back to FMW in the early 90s and has been through like 7 different promotions or something. Like, it was in Battle Arts. It was in Big Japan. I mean, it was like the top title of Battle Arts. It was the junior title for Big Japan. I don't know what else it's been in. It's been in a bunch of promotions. I think it was like in DDT proper for a while. But yeah, now it's like the top title of Gambare. And Oak is like comedy sub-brand. So it's still active this day. It's currently held by Keisuke Ishii.
But, is Gambare the one? No, it's Basara is the one that like just left the
Gambare's still a
DDT sub-brand. Universe.
Right, Gambare's still a sub-brand. But yeah, it's the top title of Gambare today. But at the time, I guess it was the top title of El Dorado, or he had it from DDT. I don't really know. But it doesn't really matter. It's just funny that this stupid little title has lasted all this time. I guess I can start. What did you think of the match?
This match was also pretty good. I never saw Kagetora this young. Like, yeah. I don't think the first time I ever saw Dragon Gate was like the early 2010s. So I never saw him like this.
Yeah, he's really.
Like, I'm pretty sure by the time I started watching, he was already a Jimmy.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, you didn't see him even his early Dragon Gate stuff.
No. Early Dragon Gate's always one of those things I've always tried to watch, and it's always annoying to try and watch.
Yeah.
It's not really an easy thing to get a hold of.
There used to be this great site called, like, Open the Dragon Gate or something that had, like, a crazy archive that you could all watch, like, in web video, and they got shut down or something, I guess.
Yeah. I know there was the Jai Archive forever, but as long as that existed, or maybe it even still exists, and I don't know, I was like still too young to give them $100 for access to it.
Yeah, I have that. I did do that.
Yeah, like if that, I don't know if that's even still a thing, but now that wouldn't be as much of an issue. But for the longest time, like I always wanted to watch this, but I could never find a way to afford $100 when I was like 19 just for this.
Yeah. Ibushi. This match is like, you know, Ibushi and Kagetora. Kagetora like really starts stringing some like ridiculous offense together, and like Ibushi takes this crazy bump like right on the back of his neck just off a flying clothesline. So like if you're wondering like how long he's been doing that shit where he takes his stupid bumps for like any move he can think of, the answer is a very long time, because like this is 2007. So
yeah, this is like over 10 years ago. And he's just been doing it. Some people are just like clearly immortal in terms of this stuff, and he's one of them.
Yeah, like it's like Masao Tanaka, right? That's a famous one you could think of immediately, where like he's been taking these fucking chair shots to the head and all this crazy shit for 25 years, and somehow he's just fine. And like Kota, I don't know how the fuck he takes all these bumps for 20 years and just totally fine, but like, he never even really misses time for injury or anything other than that. He had that one concussion period, I guess, from like when he dropped out of the New Japan DDT double contract. But like ever since then, he's pretty much been fine. So
I mean, other than when he got like sick a few months ago too.
Right, yeah.
Those are really the only time he's been pretty consistently active for as long as I've been watching this shit.
Yeah. There's this also great, this cool moment where Ibushi like, he's supposed to jump up to the top rope, and the top rope, I think, was like loose or something. So he's supposed to jump up and do a moonsault. Now, he like really has trouble on this top rope, and I think a lot of other wrestlers would have fucking fallen or something. But he, in one movement, somehow jumps back down, realizes he can't do it, jumps back down the ring, immediately jumps back onto the top rope, and does the fucking moonsault. I was like, how is this man able to do this shit? It just looked really, really great. Even his botches look amazing somehow. It's just crazy.
Yeah, to that point, you always hear a lot of people now that always say, like, oh, wrestling has evolved over the past 10 years, and that's why it's faster and more athletic. It's like a defense almost. But like, no, it hasn't. This is a better work of athleticism than like most indie matches now.
Yeah, I don't really get that, because I feel like it's...
Yeah, I don't think, like, This is just like so far ahead of where our indie guys are now.
I mean, they're just doing all this crazy shit. I mean, I don't know. I feel like people who watched, and I'm not trying to sound, I mean, there's no really way to sound to not sound pretentious when you say this. I feel like people who watch Japanese wrestling in the 00s or whatever, like, just know that's not true. You know, I mean,
I don't even think it's true in terms of U.S. indies, like, yeah, comparatively to the guys that were then. But that's a whole other argument.
That's a good point too, I guess. But yeah, the only complaint I have about this match, but I have to bring it up, is the phantom leg injury is annoying. Like, Kota at this point does not know how to consistently sell this leg, because he, like, you know, Kagator's going after the leg and he, like, fucking holds it and acts like he's, you know, in dire pain, and then just goes right back to doing his flips and his kicks, which is, there's something kind of charming about it, honestly, but, like...
Yeah, this is, like, very indie in, like, a very nice way.
Yeah, but, like, he just totally... I would have honestly preferred to be totally blew it off than he just kept going back to it, because, like, it's not like Kagatori did that much. He did a little bit, like, but it wasn't, like, as egregious as some of these, like, phantom leg injury matches you see now. He did, like, a little bit of offense, but not, like... You know, he didn't, like, fucking murder the chair like in that Masato Tanaka and Takeshita match from earlier this year. But, like, Kota just goes from, like, he'll clutch it and be like, ah, my leg. And then he'll be like, all right, time to do, like, a fucking standing moonsault that looks perfect and these fucking crazy kicks. And he's like, oh, wait, my leg. And it's just like, okay, just fucking ignore it, buddy. Just keep going.
But yeah, like, obviously this is just, like, a youth thing that you don't know. Like, just don't do it. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. No one's going to care.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it's a training thing. Like, someone is instilled that since you started doing it, you have to stick with it.
Right.
Even if you really don't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if this was today, he would have just blown it off and it would have been better.
Yeah. And I guess that just comes with the clout of being around for so long that now you can do it and no one cares. And no one cares.
There's a great, like, strike exchange where I think they do a better job selling mutual exhaustion than a lot of Japanese wrestlers do today when they're trying to go for that. So I wanted to bring that up too. But yeah, there was Kota does a Phoenix Splash, but the knee injury acts up again, which is sort of like what happened with Naito, but, like, here, like, Naito sold that the entire match, and here Kota had forgotten about it again for a while. So it's like, when he holds the knee and can't pin him, it's like, oh, really? You just did that fucking Phoenix Splash better than most people ever do anything in their lives. I think your knee is fine, buddy. But I guess you could say it's a good callback, but they never should have, like, sold the knee at that point. The crowd that was, like, previously pretty quiet too is now going completely fucking nuts. It's always a good sign for the match. And then Kota wins the Dragon Suplex hold. I was, like, 4 stars on this. And I couldn't. So when I picked this, I wasn't sure if this was the match I was remembering. I don't know, because they had multiple ones. I think it might not have been. I think they might have had an even better match, but this was still really good.
Like, yeah, I mean, I like striking Ibushi, like, a little more than current one. And, I mean, this wasn't, like, a total, like, mad Ibushi match, but there's still a lot of that in here. Like you said, there were pretty good striking exchanges for, like, what you'd expect from, like, a Dragon System indie.
Yeah.
But so, this was also really fun. I think it's, like, amazing to see, especially on how you see these guys age now and, like, how much of his athleticism he still has.
Yeah. I mean, Kagetora is still great too. I just saw him in all. I haven't watched a lot of Dragon Gate recently, but I just saw him in All Japan recently, I think, and he was awesome.
So, I feel like Dragon Gate guys are, like, almost different in how they age, though, in terms of guys that work elsewhere.
Yeah,
Those guys stay, or they just, like, they never age until they do, and then they're just done.
My theory with the Dragon Gate guys is I feel like they almost take less bumps than a lot of the Japanese wrestlers, like, because they do so many multi-man tags and they do a lot of these, like, in between, like, taking these strikes, they do a lot of, like, lucha spots and stuff. So I don't know, like, they do, like, roll throughs and stuff instead of the bumps. So,
yeah. I mean, I think it's the lucha part of it.
Yeah.
Because those guys all are the same. They all stay like this forever too.
Yeah. So, all right. But but you liked the match, right? So I guess.
Yeah. No, this one was really fun too.
Yeah, so there you go. So let's get into the fan vote. Triple H versus the Eugene, the Gene.
The Gene himself.
September 6, 2004. Kevin, you told me this was on SmackDown, but it was actually on Raw. I have to call you out for that, first of all.
That is my bad. You did watch the Steel Cage match, just to be sure, right?
I did watch one. Oh, yeah, the Steel Cage match.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we saw the right one, because I would make you pause it and go watch the right one now. But
I also watched a very bizarre opening segment with Eric Bischoff to like happily saying his own nephew is going to get murdered. I don't know what happened exactly to set that up, but I mean, look, people don't know the Eugene backstory. I'm trying to think of how to explain this in 2020.
Do people just not know Eugene now?
Basically, for some reason, WWE called up Nick Dinsmore, who was a very solid wrestler in OVW at the time. And they were like, okay, your gimmick is that you're, because this is Vince, I'm sure Vince McMahon was like, I don't know if it was an idea or somebody pitched it to him, but he's like, God damn! Eric Bischoff has a mentally handicapped nephew. Perfect! So, yes, they gave Eric Bischoff...
This is the most good shit ever.
They gave Eric Bischoff a mentally handicapped nephew, probably because they thought that was really funny. And then he actually got over? I mean, he did get over. And
you know, people liked the gene.
His whole gimmick was that he was like an idiot savant, basically. And like, he would, you know, he's watched so many WWE matches that like, he would just channel Hulk Hogan and do the leg drop, or he'd channel The Rock and do the rock bottom. You know, it was a very offensive gimmick. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with me for saying that. It got progressively more offensive, especially like when they briefly tried to turn him heel, and you know, he would yell "I'm special," like angrily, and like I think the heel turn was him confronting Maria, yelling "You're gonna give me a kiss," like while JR said something is very wrong with this young man, and I'm just like, this is very uncomfortable to watch. The heel turn only lasted a month. They only had the evil handicapped person for, and by the way, at the time they had an evil handicapped person, they were like sponsors of the Special Olympics, I think, which I don't know how they got away with that one. No one ever sent the Special Olympics the
Eugene, no one ever got the Eugene tapes. I think one of the interesting things about Eugene is the actual dude is like a true believer in the gimmick.
Oh yeah,
he still tries to do it.
The gimmick is incredibly offensive. I mean,
you could never do it anymore. It would never get away now.
The referees, so it starts with the refs telling the scared man child to get in the cage, which is very, very disturbing already. And this, at this point, we hear that Rod brought to you by Star Ocean till the end of time. Which, Adam, have you ever played that, Kevin? I never played that.
I have not. No, I don't know what that is.
It's a fucking like Squaresoft RPG. It's thought it was funny that Rod was brought to you by this fucking Squaresoft sci-fi RPG. I don't know what to say about this match. I mean, Eugene gets some early offense on Hunter that honestly looks awful. And then King is amazed. Jerry the King Lawler is amazed that Eugene understands he has to escape the cage when he goes to the door. But that kind of makes no sense, because I thought the big part of this entire gimmick was that he watched his entire character is he's watched like a million WWF matches. So
I think that was it at the start. But at this point, I think they just like made him stupid.
Okay.
I think they realized that people in 2004 really liked laughing at the slow gimmick, and kind of just leaned into that.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at the cage match, and he gets destroyed here. I mean, that's pretty much
this is like the meanest thing I've ever seen.
So go ahead, describe it.
It's just cruel. They just beat the shit out of him for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, they bloody him really badly. So you have to watch this, again, this character who's like a handicapped man-child with bleeding a fucking gusher. And you're just like, it is honestly uncomfortable to watch. It's like this poor fucking guy. Like if you're watching this, like, you know, he's not actually mentally handicapped. So you can separate that, I guess. But like, if you watch it for what it's supposed to be, it is incredibly disturbing.
Yeah, but this was like people loved this at the time.
What?
Yeah, no. This was over.
Okay. Well, no, the crowd stops reacting at some point. I mean, they start trying to chant for Eugene here and there, but they go silent. And this is not like 2020 WWE where like the crowd goes silent all the time. I mean, they go really quiet during the middle of this, during the Hunter beatdown. So I thought it was I actually thought it was uncomfortable for them too for a little bit.
No, I mean, it definitely was, but they were into Eugene at the start is the weird thing. Like, people were, they really wanted him to come in, but they just did this just, like, this is, I don't even know if this is like a Triple H sniffing out the guy getting two over in front of him deal, like it usually is with him, or if it was just him deciding, like, this guy's getting any cheers, I need to completely ruin him.
Yeah.
But I mean, he has, like, malice for Eugene that even for him, you really never see in anybody.
I mean, he was programmed with this guy pretty much for months before this, so I don't know. Like, in this whole long gimmick where he, like, buddied up to him and was, like, using him, and then they blew it off at SummerSlam with Hunter beating him. You know, it was only a few weeks before this. And I don't know if Hunter just decided, you know, because obviously he was pretty much booking Raw at this point. And I don't know if he just decided, like, well, I'm kind of resentful all of a sudden that I was booked with this character, so I'm gonna just destroy him.
Yeah, they were really mean to, like, the actual Eugene guy. And like I said with Eugene, he is a, like, true, true believer in the gimmick. Like, yeah. He thinks – Nick D'Amore is his name, right? It's something close to that. Dinsmore?
Yeah,
he thinks this shit is genius.
Yeah.
There's even, like – there's a commentary over this on YouTube with him doing it. And, like, even he doesn't think it's, like, that cruel, but – I feel like anyone else who watches this thinks this is like the cruelest shit they've ever done.
Yeah.
It's not, it's definitely not the most offensive thing. It's not even the most offensive Triple H thing. Obviously there's a more glaring one, but he was never, I don't know. He's just so cruel. Like, it feels like he's really trying to beat up Eugene.
Yeah.
And not like the guy that's playing the Eugene character.
Yeah. And this is all to get him heel heat to build him and Randy Orton on the, I think 6 days later, which is like and then he beats Orton like a month after he became the youngest world champion of all time. It's like, okay, he really just could do whatever the fuck he wanted. So yeah, I don't know. It's a lot.
But he had to slum it. Yeah, I guess he figured he had to slum it up with Eugene for a few months. So
yeah.
So now he's just going to win the title.
Yeah. So he like hits the pedigree, but instead of pinning him, he just goes back, or leaving the cage, he goes back in to keep assaulting him. He gives him like this arm breaker thing. Then he leaves the cage, and then he goes back and assaults him some more at the cage door, and that's pretty much it. Now, this comes off like a blow off of Eugene, but he lasts like 3 more years after this.
Like, yeah, Eugene lasted a while, and then even after they fired Eugene, like, they did keep trying more Eugenes after that.
What do you mean? Like, give an example.
Festus was basically Eugene.
Great, you could argue maybe the Great Khali is a babyface was kind
of
like
sort of, but that was more racist than it was like mentally handicapped people. Who is the other guy? I'm missing. There's another one, and I've talked about him recently that I can't think. But like, obviously, Festus was right after that.
Yeah, Festus was definitely like a same kind of.
Which is, yeah, Festus is these like identical stuff.
Yeah.
And they did it with the one other guy. I can't remember. It wasn't Midian. If I remember it again, I'll say it. But I know they, like, Vince kept coming. This is clearly an archetype that Vince found funny.
Yeah.
But Eugene last, like, you would think Eugene would be one of those things that was like a year terrible mistake that they try and erase from their history, but it lasted years.
Yeah, I mean, he comes back. He is off of TV for like a month, and I looked it up on Cage Match because I was curious. And he comes back with basically to do a tag team with William Regal, who was like his protector, I guess, during this whole time. And they win the tag titles, and I guess then he gets hurt, and Tajiri replaces him. And then, you know, at some point they do the heel turn. I think the heel turn's 2006, which is, again, like the heel turn and the very brief heel run was some of the most offensive stuff they ever put on television, probably. Like, even they got away from that for like a month. They were like, okay, this is fucked up even for us.
And yeah, like, that didn't last at all for them. And like, think about their standards.
Yeah, I know. So they turn him back. And then I guess I think he's gone by like 07. So Festus, and yeah, I don't know who the other one is. Heidenreich?
Sort of, but that's not what I was thinking. Okay. But that does sort of track.
So yes, WWE, everybody.
Very bad, very like just meeting of the very despicable minds.
Yeah, I mean, you lived up to the podcast name with this pick. I mean, there's really almost nothing redeeming about this. It's uncomfortable to watch. It's not very fun. There's nothing interesting, really. It's just Hunter squashing him and making him bleed and throwing him in the cage, and then it's over.
So, again, I can't say it's the worst Triple H match because of the obvious real worst Triple H match. But yeah, nothing he never did anything like just straight up in the ring as mean as this. This was like cruel.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a great way to end the show, I guess. Do you want to go ahead and unless you want to talk about Attack on Titan first?
I think we anyone who would care would know what we were talking about earlier, I think, right?
Yes, I think so.
And anyone who wouldn't care, like, wouldn't stay to listen to it anyway. So I think we got it out.
Yeah. So why don't you go ahead and give me the plug, the big plug for the Bad Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah, make sure you listen to that. It's on Twitter at Bad Rest Podcast. I believe, if I'm wrong, I'm sure it'll be right in the description of this. I don't know how quick your turnaround is. What'd you say?
Wrestling would not fit for you either.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. But I don't know how quick your turnaround is on this, so I don't know what the most recent episode is. It's either going to be episode 50, which is going to be on in-ring Vince McMahon, or it's going to be on the Texas Indies, or it's going to be about Chicago radio host Man Cow's appearance in WCW. So I'm not sure which is going to be the one.
So this goes. This one will go up tonight, as in Saturday the 18th, or
tomorrow? Oh, then it's still the Undertaker versus Kane SmackDown 2011. So if you like hearing people shit on WWE TV, I'm technically on it, but I'm AFK for about an hour for something I had to do. But Chris and my co-host and our guest Connor are in on that one pretty deep, and I'm there for the first half of it too.
Okay, so Undertaker.
So it's still the Undertaker one on that.
I don't think I watched that feud in real time.
The one where the Undertaker is in a vegetative state and Kane has to save him?
Yeah, I mean, I heard about it, but I don't think I watched
it. It's very funny, but if you want to watch some real stupid WWE talk, that's definitely the place to go. But
all right.
The next ones are the Texas Indies, which that one's really good. That one I had a lot of fun with. The Vince matches are almost all hilarious. Like we have like Vince versus Brett and stuff on there, and those are all classics. And the Man Cow one we haven't recorded yet, but we're probably going to next week. That one's also going to be good.
All right. So, folks, thank you as always for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase. As I mentioned, wrestling did not fit. And folks, if you want to vote in the poll, so if you really wanted to hear about Hunter and Kevin Nash instead of Hunter and Eugene, and you're mad you didn't get the vote, as long as these five matches thing goes, we're going to have a poll every week. So at WrestleOmakase, make sure you follow it, and you can vote in whatever that week's poll is. Either it's always my pick versus the other guy's pick. I'm now 1-1 because I used Chris Benoit, the Crippler, to beat Joe Lanza's pick.
Crippler is hot. The Crippler is a hot commodity right now, so...
I used the Crippler to beat.
But he couldn't top the gene.
Yeah, but this week I tried to go with Hunter and Nash and as a counter for Hunter and the gene and did not work. But it got me 59-41 was actually less than I expected to lose to you by, so it wasn't all bad. But yes, so next week my guest will be Jojo Remy formerly from the Japan Audio Wrestling Podcast, I should say, which is fun. He'll be, I mean, he and I have known each other forever. I met him for the first time on my first Japan trip in 2016, but we've never really had the time or the ability to have him on the podcast because he lives in Japan. So, you know, it would have been a little bit difficult, but now, you know, nobody's got to go anywhere in America or Japan, so we can make it work. So Jojo will be on next week. You know, I'm sure we'll have a bunch of Japanese wrestling picks and stuff. So definitely check that out. 2 weeks from now is going to be Okan. So somebody asked Okan if he was going to pick FIP and for me again, and he said no. So who knows what he has in mind.
You know that he won our draft and then picked FIP again?
Oh, did he really?
Yes.
I totally forgot. I didn't even know that.
He won the first one, and he picked FIP.
Wow. Well, yeah,
we got the ring announcer to come on for an interview. I don't know if you listened to that one.
No, I didn't hear that one. But yeah, he basically he has promised not to pick FIP again. So we'll see. But that's 2 weeks from now. I'm trying to plan these out every 2 weeks, basically. I'm like New York, push him back the fucking state of emergency. Do you know that they keep doing that in 2 week increments? You live here, so you must know that.
I mean, yeah, I know they keep pushing it back. I kind of just assume that we're months away, so I don't really read the news there.
Why do they keep doing it in 2 week increments? It's like, what is really going to change, bro, at this point? Like, we're still losing, like, hundreds of people a day. I mean, like, you'd think you'd want to just say, yeah, it's going to be through May at least. But right now, officially, we might reopen New York State on May 15th. I fucking doubt it, but that's officially the next date. So
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's going to be like fucking June. But
I think it's going to be even late. New York, I think we're going to be even later.
Okay. I mean like a very soft reopening, like in stages. I think maybe they'll try something in June.
But yeah, maybe they will. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's getting much better.
But yeah. So anyway, I'm glad we depressed everybody at the end here. But hey, Wrestling Omakase, we'll be here the whole time. I'm stuck in my house. What the fuck else do I have to do but watch these old wrestling matches? So thank you as always for listening. And folks, we will see you next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.